Friday Night Wine Fight contains coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome to Friday Night Wine Fight.
I'm Bianca.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Amy. We are three Melbourne girls who had nothing better to do than start a podcast while we're all living la vida lockdown. But now we're free. Yay! For now. And then we'll see what happens. Yeah. So we take aim at one topic each week with a bottle or three of wine or whatever Sarah can drink, and we try to make some sense of it and each other. Ladies, what are we drinking?
Well, I'm drinking. I was just taking a mouthful. Forgot I was first. I'm drinking Four Men and a Shed. It's the Small Batch Trials, I had it earlier. Montepulciano? I know it's a CH. It's not a CI because it's, yeah, that's the way you would say that particular allotment of letters.
Is it though? Montepulciano?
No, Ciano. Oh. It's a ch. Okay. Yeah, because it's, you know, Italian or whatever. Yeah, it's actually from the Barossa Valley, and I got it through the Wine Pyramid Scheme.
Yes.
So I opened the bottle a few days ago because, well, life, and I'm finishing it off. So, yes, it's delicious. Very dry, listeners. If you get onto this one, it is dry.
That's so red, yeah?
Yeah, it's red. Yeah. So, yeah, and it's quite heavy alcohol-wise. Like, it's 8.3 standard drinks in the bottle. So, yeah, that's why I split it sort of. I drink half one the other day, and I'm finishing it off today. So, yeah.
Nice.
Well, we all know I'm not drinking, so, Amy.
The fun police is still on you, mate. Jesus.
Yes.
You have to learn to shake those bastards. Me. What am I drinking? I am trying some bubbles that I got from the Wine Pyramid Scheme, which I'm going to start hashtagging soon because I want them to notice that we're plugging their shit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. So I am drinking Jen Pfeiffer, the Rebel Bubbles NV, and it's good for bubbles, actually. It's nice. It is your standard dry, normal champagne-y bubbles, not that fruity bullshit that other people call champagne. It's real champagne.
No, so is it still your bubbly girlfriend?
Oh, yeah. She's my super sweet, like, Tinder date. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's nice. It's going down well. And it's about to run into the Hungry Jacks I have for dinner and is going to end me. So strap in, listeners.
Yeah.
Someone resurrect me if I'm dead by the time we get around to my segment.
Okay.
No.
That was really definitive, Sarah. I feel like that you don't want my presence back in your life after I'm dead. What's up with that?
I'm totally dead against zombies. I'm sorry. Once you're dead, you're dead.
I've tried to resurrect her and that didn't work. And then I got a brother and he just yelled, get up, and she was up. I was like, fucking tried, I tell ya.
Yeah, it takes a firm hand to know how to deal with drunk Amy. It really does. Anyway, let's crack on with tonight's topic. Bianca, what are we rambling about tonight?
Well, our topic tonight is, drum roll please, musicals from our childhood. Woo!
Ooh.
So, I thought I'd start with what is a musical film, because it does have a definition. So a musical film is a film genre in which songs by the characters are interwoven into the narrative, sometimes accompanied by singing and dancing. The songs usually advance the plot or develop the film's characters, but in some cases they serve merely as breaks in the storyline and often as elaborate production numbers. Musical films characteristically, that was good, I said that well, contain elements.
I'm impressed.
High five. Right. they contain elements reminiscent of theatre. Performers often treat their song and dance numbers as if a live audience were right there. And that just ploy to draw audiences in and keep them watching again and again. Yeah. And look, I won't bore you with a complete rundown of all musical films over time, but I will go over a few from my younger years, okay? So throughout the 1980s and 1990s, musicals tended to be mainly coming from the Disney animated films of the period, and they were from composers and lyricists. Yeah, that sounds terrible.
yeah, that's not a word. Shut up, Amy.
Lyricist? Is that the word you're looking for?
Is it a lyricist?
That's what I said.
Yeah, does that sound like a word? Anyway, mostly it was Howard Ashman, Alan Menken, and Stephen Schwartz. Some productions of the 1980s and 1990s included The Apple, which I haven't seen, don't know what it is.
No.
Xanadu, love it. The Blues Brothers,
love it.
That's a musical, yes. I could have done that one. I didn't even think of that one.
I know, right? Annie.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, right. Monty Python, The Meaning of Life.
As we discussed, is a musical.
It is a musical, yeah. The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Dolly represent, y'all.
Victor Victoria, Footloose, which we all love, Fast Forward, which I don't know, A Chorus Line, no idea, Little Shop of Horrors, yes, Forbidden Zone,
Little Shop of Horrors,
Baby Seymour, Forbidden Zone, I don't know what that is. I don't even know what that
means.
Know what that is.
I don't know what that is.
Absolute Beginners, no, I don't know what that means either. Labyrinth. Hell yes.
Yes.
Evita. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cry for me, Argentina.
And Everyone Says I Love You.
Never heard of it.
What is it?
How Everyone Says I Love You. Yeah, no idea.
Never heard of it.
No. Yeah. So, however, Can't Stop the Music, starring The Village People, which also came out around this time, was a calamitous attempt to resurrect the old-style musicals of, like, the 20s and 30s and stuff like that, and was released to audience indifference in 1980.
Yeah.
Indifference. Little Shop of Horrors was based on the off-Broadway musical adaptation of a 1960 Roger Corman film, a precursor of a later film to stage to film adaptations. and that also included The Producers. So that was also a film to stage to film. So many animated films of the period predominantly were from Disney, which is, yeah, it was.
Yeah, so for this us. Thing,
for us. As included, children. Yeah, yes, exactly. Include traditional music numbers. I've already mentioned the guys. I've got it there twice. Awesome. Just covering all bases. And so, look, let's start with the beginning of the Disney movies. So 1989's The Little Mermaid. And it's called, and basically this period is called the Disney Renaissance, right? It gave new life to musical film. So other successful animated musicals included Aladdin, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, and Pocahontas. So they were the ones from Disney. Beauty and the Beast is supposed to be in there. Where did that go? Oh, my God, there's a whole bunch of others that aren't in there. Anyway, this is what happened when I transferred things from my phone into the Google Docs, and I've lost stuff. It's okay.
There's also Cinderella, Snow White.
No,
we're from the era. When we were children.
Yeah.
Oh, fair.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise we'd be here all day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, it's just so many. Like, when you start looking at it, I'm like, whoa. So some other, Nightmare Before Christmas, I should say, is from Disney, but it's actually Disney's division Touchstone Pictures. There was The Prince of Egypt, which was fucking terrible. DreamWorks.
I've never watched it.
Oh, it's a downer. Let me tell you.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the biblical story was a bit of a downer.
Oh, it was an absolute downer. I don't know why they made it into an animation for kids. It's just a downer.
I don't know.
Oh, Mom look at the Little Mermaid.
When did she die?
In the original story.
Oh, my God. We're talking about Disney.
I know, but I'm saying Disney changes things to make them slightly happier.
Exactly. And what we're telling you is that we have watched The Prince of Egypt and they took the story almost verbatim and then tried to sell it as a kids movie when it's not. It's just still a downer.
They still tried to probably make it a little bit happier if you really
not really.
Look at it.
Nope. Nope.
Not that's really. How bad the story was depressing that even Disney couldn't make it happy.
Yeah. Correct.
Just
they
saying.
Can't polish that turn.
And we had Anastasia from Fox.
Love and that movie.
Fox Don Bluth, I should say. Don Bluth is awesome.
That was one of my favorite movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And to finish out this list, South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut.
That's not my favorite.
I didn't think of it. I did not think of that one when I was thinking of, because I was thinking more childhood. So I was thinking when I was like primary school, not high school.
Yeah, I would have done the same. I would have discounted on the basis it wasn't from my childhood.
Yeah, but technically, I mean, we do look at it when you know teenage children go, "Oh, you're a child," but I still don't. No,
everything under 30 is a child, as far as I'm concerned. So, including you, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. 100%.
Definitely. Under 30. I'm a child.
Yeah. So we're now crack on to the movie that, well, actually, movies that I'm going to discuss. Grease 1 and 2. And straight off the bat, Grease 2 was better than Grease 1.
You were wrong.
Nope.
I'm going to say you were definitely wrong because I tried to watch Grease 2, got 5 minutes in and went, this is shit, and turned it off.
I know. No. I watched it plenty of times, but it's not as good as Grease 1.
No.
Yeah, no.
Better actors. Better actors. Michelle Pfeiffer. Better songs. Better storyline. Michelle Pfeiffer. Okay. Grease 1 had John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, and Stockard Channing. But that's all it had going for it. Grease 1 was like one of those movies that was always chucked on by the teacher at the end of the year. All schoolwork was done and they were just killing time.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true.
I can't say that I didn't sing along to every word and say every line and watch it 500,000 times because my mom taped it off the TV.
Yeah, same. But,
like, I did. It's just Grease 2 had a lot more humor and better feminist values to share. And Fun fact before I jump into this, right? My mum went and saw Grease 1 16 times at the Picture Theatre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so to understand the premise of Grease 2, for those who don't know, right, simply take everything you know about Grease 1 and reverse it. They literally just made the girl the tough one and the boy the straight-laced outsider from another country. The film takes place 2 years after Sandy and Danny drove off into the clouds. Stephanie, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, is the leader of the Pink Ladies. And at the start of the film, we learn she's broken up with Johnny, the leader of the T-Birds. This is problematic because Pink Ladies are T-Bird property. They
Yes, excuse me. Yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. Ugh, gross. They actually use that word. Anyway, it's important, though, as it sets the tone for what, in comparison, is to be the enormously problematic original. It is surely one of second-wave feminism's most stirring texts. So in comes new student Michael, played by Maxwell Caulfield, or Rex Manning, as he will be forever known. I wrote her. That's awesome. The English cousin of Australian Sandy from Grease 1. Why the cousin was English, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Because everybody outside of Northern America speaks the same if you speak English, apparently. There's no different.
Well, I was just going with colonialism. colonism. Yep. Colons. Yep.
there was a lot of colon going on in the show. Just putting it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Sandy, Michael is unprepared to deal with the fast-paced life as an American teen. Hard. Naturally uncool, yet incredibly beautiful Michael falls in love with brash Stephanie. But without a motorcycle, he's got no hope, none. This deal breaker, absolutely, is conveyed to him via the movie musical equivalent of Hamlet's to be or not to be soliloquy. Cool writer. The first of many reasons why Grease 2 fucks Grease 1 out of the water, right? Cool writer is Stephanie's big, here's where I speak my truth moment, a Pat Benatar-esque rock out about the kind of man she wants and how she won't settle for less.
She also channels her inner Cher and straddles everything in sight.
Absolutely. And who doesn't?
Right.
But anyway, the song is prompted by Michael asking her out after she kissed him publicly to prove to Johnny that she was nobody's chick. Yeah. Example of Stephanie as a feminist icon, number one. By the time we arrive at Cool Rider, we know Stephanie is a bad bitch. She's underplayed her part in his drink. She's subtly underplayed her part in every scene or big song, including Score Tonight, a thinly veiled sex metaphor set in a bowling alley. Basically, we're eating out of her hand from here on in, right? Sandy's truth moment, on the other hand, is hopelessly devoted to you, performed in a nightgown, sitting on a lawn at a sleepover. The pink ladies have been teasing her about being an uptight virgin without pierced ears. So she goes out and has a cry and pines, Danny.
I don't think that is her truth moment. I think when she sees the when they win the drag thing and then she sings Sandra D but in her own version, that was her coming out. That's her truth moment. That's when she's like, okay, I can do it. I can be different. I can be more powerful. I can be a person that I want to be, not just this meek Sandra D thing, you know. Goodbye to Sandra D.
It still sucks. Yeah. So yeah, like the whole time, like the up until like the hopelessly devoted to you, and even beyond that, like he lied about banging her and like shrugged it off in front of his mates. Like, what a fucking total douche. And we're supposed to eat it up like that's the okay guy.
No wonder that's the whole so many
failed that's relationships. The
whole point of Stockard Channing's character. That's what she says. Why are we eating this shit?
Yes. Which is why she's amazing and I love her. And that's why, like, realistically, that's all the movie has going for it, like, is those actors.
And Frenchie, come on. She's awesome.
She's in Grease too. So, you know, she carries on. So she dropped out, went to beauty school, and then she dropped out of beauty school because her hair went pink. And so.
Which looked amazing, by the way.
Yeah, so I know, right? And then because it's 2 years after. So I'm actually a little confused now thinking about it that it's 2 years after and she's still in high school when they only have 1 year left, obviously.
She was a bit dumb, mate.
Yeah.
She's a bit dim.
Yeah. So anyway, therefore, my verdict is Grease 2 is better. Girl power. So, yeah, look, if anyone feels differently about my view on these movies, feel free to reach out on all our socials. I will fight you.
Me. I think you're wrong. But anyway, we'll take that. We'll take that offline.
Email me at fridaynightwinefight@gmail.com and let's take this up. I look forward to hearing from you. It's just going to be a big fuck you, Amy.
That's Sarah's email address. fridaynightwinefightfuckyouamy.com.
I look forward to hearing from everyone. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Budget already.
Yeah.
All right, so I went a different way from the literal childhoods, like the era, because I didn't really watch those ones as a kid. So I grew up watching a lot of musicals, thanks to my beautiful Nana, who would babysit my sisters and I when Mum had to work. So she would let us take turns picking movies that we wanted to watch. But, of course, that was after, you know, her shows had finished.
After her stories.
After her stories. So once Murder, She Wrote and The Golden Girls were done, we could have the TV. Mind you, I absolutely love Murder, She Wrote and have watched every single episode of The Golden Girls.
Right?
So, yeah, I'm just going to run through some of the movies of my faves that were musicals of my childhood because they're the ones I watched as a kid.
I am also doing something similar.
Yeah. So we're going to start off with Numero Uno, my favorite of all time, Singing in the Rain.
Ah, yes.
Everyone knows this. This is just like a pinnacle of fucking movies, like musicals. You hear a musical, oh, yeah, Singing in the Rain, right? Yes. That scene where he's dancing in the rain, oh, it's amazing. He had a fever of 103 Fahrenheit.
Probably need to cool off.
Just saying that.
Really?
Yeah. Fun fact, he was running a really high fever.
Well, dude.
Yeah. So it was released in 1952 and it runs for an hour and 43 minutes. The director is Stanley Doen and Gene Kelly, who, again, starred in it. Along with Donald O'Connor, who I had mentioned in a previous episode of Famous Last Words. He's the one that wanted to thank everyone for his Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, yeah.
And still hasn't got it.
Yeah. Give Debbie man Reynolds. An Oscar.
Yeah. And Debbie Reynolds was in it too. Aww. She was really pretty when she was young. So, the plot. When the transition is being made from silent films to talkies, everyone was having a bit of trouble adapting. Don, played by Gene Kelly, and Linda, played by, I can't remember her name, but she has a very interesting freaking life story. I read all about it. Can't remember her name. Were cast as repeatedly as the romantic couple when it was silent films. But when their latest film is remade into a musical, only Don has the voice to do the new singing parts. So after a lot of practice with a dictation coach, Lena still sounds terrible. She has this high-pitched, nasally kind of voice. A little bit like mine, but higher-pitched. Yeah. So they take Kathy, a bright young aspiring actress, and she's hired to record over Lena's voice.
So even after using a diction coach and everything else, they could not make her sound right.
No.
So it's not her voice. It's her we see, but it's not her voice.
Yeah, in the movie they're making. So in the movie, Lena, like she, the dictation coach is like, ta-tay-tee-to-too.
Okay.
And she's turned around, she's like, ta-tay-tee-to-too. That. She can't do round tones.
Right.
Yeah.
No how now, brown cow.
There was no brown how cow. Now, brown cow. But Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor also had a dictation coach. And that scene with them turns into an amazing song, like about Moses and he knows this, his toes aren't roses, and it's very, very catchy.
I need to dictate it. Like
diction. Diction. It's diction. It's not dictation. Dick coach. That's what I do.
Dick coach. Yes.
You need a dick coach? Yeah, yep. Fair enough. Speaking of dick coaches.
Yes.
So. One that actually a movie I was just watching before you guys called for this because going through, I'm like, I haven't watched that movie in ages. I'm going to watch it. Kiss Me, Kate, released in 1953, again runs for about an hour and 50 minutes. Stars Catherine Grayson, Howard Neal, and Ann Miller. So this story involves a production of a musical version of William Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew and the conflict of the onstage and offstage between Fred, who is Howard Keel, and Lily, who is Catherine Grayson. They are exes. So they were married, got divorced, and now they're doing this show together. So, yeah, it's like a secondary romance concerning also Lois Lane. That's a weird name. Where have I heard that one? Oh, Superman. Hey, I'm with it. Oh, so she's the actress playing Lily's sister, Bianca.
Bianca.
I know, it's American.
I know. It sounds like they dropped something in water. Bianca. Bianca.
I'm just going to say Bianca.
Bianca.
Bianca. And her gambling boyfriend, Bill, who runs afoul of some gangsters.
Of course we've got a gambling boyfriend named Bill.
Gets everyone
as long as he doesn't change his name to Billeth.
Yeah.
Get possessed by God, oh, I'm okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Okay.
Fucking Bill.
So, yeah, I absolutely love Kiss Me, Kate, because Catherine Grayson, she plays such a good role. One minute she's absolutely in love, next thing she's screaming at him that he's a louse. And I'm like, yes, I love that term. You louse. Why don't we use that term anymore?
Louse.
But there was a part in a song, the song Tom, Dick and Harry, where
this chick singing
that she'll take any Tom, Dick or Harry.
Yep.
And she's like, take any Tom, Harry or Dick. And then she's like, I'll take a dick. I'll take a dick. And I'm like, yeah, that's my friends. Bianca will take a dick. And they repeated just that part or like 10 times. And I'm like, yeah, sounds like my friends. So, yeah. So, again, I only really picked that up as an adult. As a kid, I bypassed that whole she'll take a dick because she's a bit of a hoe.
That would have been super funny for you to be going to school with that in your head and singing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the fact that we used to just sing it around the house at Nan. Yeah.
Although I knew your Nan and I know your sisters. I feel like this is accurate. Yeah.
It sounds like a normal Sunday, to be honest. They'll
just sit there and laugh because, you know, keep it to themselves, bastards. Okay. Next one is actually one of my daughter's favorites as well as mine. Sorry. Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. So also released in the 1950s. Runs for about an hour and 40 minutes. Stanley Doen again as the director. It stars Jane Powell, Howard Keel, and Jeff Richards. So Howard Keel, he's a really good singer. Like, he's really good. And he has that whole, that's a man look.
He's a man. 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 He's a man in tights.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So the plot.
Does he roam around the forest looking for fights?
Actually, in this one, yes. Yeah, he does.
And then he finishes his big number with la 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 la.
Oh my God! So you've seen it.
Oh, so it's Keely,
the dog.
Yeah, I think he heard you singing.
So this joining the tunes, like he complaining.
So this was actually set in 1850, and Adam, the eldest of seven brothers, goes into town to get himself a wife. He convinces Millie to marry him that very same day. They return to his backwoods house, and only then does she discover that he has six brothers, and they're all living in one cabin.
Well, that's a lot of roommates. No.
Yeah. So she sets out to reform the uncouth siblings who are anxious to get wives of their own.
Just go down to the local wives store. Back in 1850, you could sell wives.
Well, so, you know. Then after reading about the Roman capture of the Sabine women, Adam develops an inspired solution to his brother's loneliness. They go to town, which is a fair hike because they're living out in the fucking backwoods. So, you know, It's at least 4-hour ride into town to go get themselves some wives, which they kidnap from their houses.
Oh, that's not problematic at all.
Not at all. Even though all these girls had, you know, gentlemen that were interested in them.
I was going to say lives, but okay.
Yeah, well, they also, no, they were women back in 1850. They had no lives. Fuck, they had to sit there and sew. That was their life. You sit, sew, find a man.
Sit, sew, or wait for someone to come and marry you.
Exactly. Well, these guys kidnapped them, took them back to the cottage. There was a landslide in between the canyon and blocked the path that you could get to it. So they were trapped there for the entire winter. So there was a little bit of Stockholm syndrome happening towards the end.
Yes. You reckon? Clearly.
But yeah. A
little bit.
Just a little bit. But I actually really liked the movie, apart from the whole, you know, kidnap the women.
Apart from the whole plot's problematic. But hey, I like the movie.
Then again, there is a point in the movie where women are like, well, we've been kidnapped. This is shit. Nah. Men, you're moving out into the cabin further into the woods. Off you. Fuck off. This is our house. Fuck off. And they did. The guys left and they went out and lived in a fucking cabin. So, yeah. Bit of an interesting little goof with that one. In Wonderful, Wonderful Day, which is a song, and the birds flying onto the set and several of them crashed into the painted backdrop in the background.
Oh, you couldn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And the director did, in fact, acknowledge this during an interview, like in a documentary, and I went, I am now going to have to watch that to find these birds. Dumbass. That will be hilarious. All right. So last one. Gigi.
And not the Jennifer, what's her name? Remake with Ben Affleck.
No, that's isn't that a different name?
Oh, no, that's Gigli, isn't it?
Oh, Gigli, yeah. It's Gigli, but it's spelled Gigli.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is Gigi. released in 1958, runs for an hour and 55 minutes. It has Leslie Harmon, Maurice, I don't know how to say his last name, and
Cavalier, or is it Chevalier? Doesn't this have Zsa Zsa Gabor in it?
No, this has Eva Gabor.
So close.
So close.
So damn close.
In fact, Zaza's little sister.
Real close.
And Louis Jordan, is that how you say it? I don't know.
Jordan, mate.
Jordan. They say Jordan. It's Jordo.
Louis Jordo.
Jordo.
It is full French name, Jordo.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So the whole premise of this is wealthy Parisian man is bored with high society life and she's just not enjoying anything. So he spends his time with his uncle's ex, so lover. Courtesan?
Mistress.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Who is currently raising her granddaughter to follow in the family business.
Oh.
Which is?
Being a courtesan.
Oh, yeah.
Because, as they say in the movie, what was it? We may not marry at first, but we get married at last or something like that. It's basically try before you buy, dear. And while you're doing it, make sure they're rich and you get lots of presents.
Again, this is not problematic at all.
Not at all. Well, not for our other aunt, who is rolling in frickin' diamonds, that she has gotten off princes and Arabian kings. So, you know, she's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So he spends time with them, you know, just as, like, a way to pass the time. And then all of a sudden he starts realizing, oh, Gigi, you've grown into a woman. I think I love you. And she's all like, no, I know what you're all about.
So I'm on to you, mate.
Yeah, no. I'm on to you. You want me to go out with you and then we'll be in papers and then we'll fight and that will be in papers. And then you'll want to take me to bed. No, I'm not having your shenanigans. Fuck off. So, yeah, And then, yeah, in the end, you know, it all works out to the way everyone wants it. So, yeah, that's set in 1900 France. Yeah. Very good movie. Do suggest watching it. Eva Gabor is absolutely hilarious. She's actually in another thing I've watched.
She's in lots of stuff.
Is in lots of stuff. In fact, she does the voice for, again, with the Biancas. Or Biancas. Miss Bianca in The Rescuers. You know the little mouse?
Yeah.
That's her.
Ah.
Eva Gabor.
Nice.
So, yeah, those are my musicals that I watched constantly as a kid. I still watch them.
Yeah.
I've got them all on DVD. They're amazing. Go watch them. Now, stop listening. Go watch. Then come back and finish listening.
Yeah.
Don't listen to Amy. Walk. Don't run. No, run. Don't walk. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Run, don't walk. Then once you've watched these movies, come back and then listen to Amy. So, Amy. Oh,
all right. Well,
now that everyone's back from watching these movies, what do you have?
I have another one they have to run off and go and watch if they haven't seen it. So, yeah, this is great.
Awesome.
So, musicals of our childhood. It was almost an unspoken rule between us that we were not going to go into Disney musicals of our childhood because we would be here all fucking day and it needs its own topic.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I started to go back into my mind to think of all the musicals that I used to watch as a child, and there was many, but one really stuck out, really, really stuck out, and that was Mary Poppins. I think I watched it 1,000 times as a child because my mum, like Bianca's mum, taped it off TV.
Yeah.
That's how you did it in the 80s and 90s, just taped stuff off TV.
And if your mum is really nice, she'd tape out the ads.
Oh, yeah. She would pause it. But my mum was always doing 60 million things at once, so sometimes she'd forget to come and unpause it, and my brother and I'd be screaming from the lounge room, "Mum, it's back on!" And then she'd come screaming from the other end of the house and have to press play or record. And of course, when we went to watch it back, we missed like the first 3 minutes of the next part of the movie. Yeah. So sometimes re-watching things that my mum taped for us, I'm actually seeing scenes I didn't see. Yeah.
Wow.
I can imagine. It's like watching a whole new movie.
Yeah, sometimes. It's a whole bit I miss. I'm like, oh, now this all makes sense. Awesome. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. So, Mary Poppins. The movie stars Julie Andrews in her film debut and the classic Dick Van Dyke. Yeah, love Dick Van Dyke. And it was released in 1964. So around the same time, all of Sarah's favourite movies were released.
It was a good era.
Yeah. This is a Disney movie, but it's not the animated kind.
Yeah.
So the movie is about a dysfunctional English family seeking a nanny. In walks Julie Andrews as Mary Poppins.
Walks? She doesn't walk, bitch. I'm getting there.
Okay.
Fucking walks in.
And she's the most amazing nanny who ever did live. Yeah. The movie was the highest grossing film in Disney's history at that point and received 13 Oscar nominations. It's actually, I think, one of the highest nominated movies that Disney has ever had. Yeah. Still. So it's a classic. Yeah. So, if you haven't seen the movie, the basic plot is this. A well-off London family need a nanny for their two children, Jane and Michael. After yet another nanny quits because of the children's shenanigans, the father puts an ad in the local paper for a stern, proper, no-nonsense nanny. However, the children express that they want someone who's kind and sweet. And so they write their own ad and they give it to the father. They sing, there's a whole song behind it, and he goes, "What a load of rubbish," and he throws it into the fireplace. And the torn up pieces of paper actually go up in through the chimney and up into the sky. Apparently that's where Mary Poppins is. I don't know. I didn't really question it as a child. I just went with it. Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, the amount of times I put things in the fireplace to go up the fucking chimney.
Right.
And it never fucking worked.
How many times I've wanted Mary Poppins to come and clean my house? You have no idea. So anyway.
That's as an adult.
Right.
We all know she doesn't do that shit.
The amount of times I sing and click, nothing.
You need two children for that.
Actually, it's magic.
There's a problem. I'm one and done.
Same. It's a whole song where she helps the children use magic powers to clean up the nursery.
Yes. Anyway. She's not helping you, though. You're too old.
There's a brain of a five-year-old, though.
You're meant to be off throwing yourself in front of a horse or something.
Oh, yeah. Or just, you know, walking down the road screaming DTF.
Yeah.
Anyway, a few days later, the children witness Mary Poppins flying down from the heavens using her umbrella. Fucking majestic, I tell you. Absolutely fucking majestic. But I try to use my umbrella to fly down from the sky. I look like an idiot. And I end up hurting myself. So this is pretty good. Anyway, Mary Poppins interviews with the father, hires herself, and convinces him it was his idea. Yeah.
Because she's not dumb.
It's actually amazing. Yeah. And then after a series of magical adventures, a series of magical adventures occur, and man, there's some absolute tunes that accompany them with their adventures. Dick Van Dyke is Mary's friend Bert, who accompanies Mary and the children on their adventures, casually dropping a tune along the way. Some of the most notable tunes that I'm just going to highlight are Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I loved that song as a child. Loved it.
I had a funny take on that one. Super fuck this shit. I fucking hate COVID. Super fuck this shit. I hate fucking COVID. And same.
Yeah, same. Next one I quite liked was a spoonful of sugar. And that's a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Yeah. Don't eat spoonfuls of raw sugar, people. Or bleach sugar either. Just don't. That's not good for you. But
I
anyway.
Think it's just a spoonful of bullshit helps the truth go down.
Through your system, like
exactly. Unless you're a hardcore sugar addict, maybe don't try that. Yeah.
Definitely don't try it if you're diabetic. Just
coma. That's where you will be. Next classic tune is Chim Chimmery. Yes.
Ah, Chim Chim Chimmery.
Yes, correct. That was the song that I adapted to my own circumstances when I was building my buffet cabinet. Nothing fit. Yeah. Just put some shims in there to hold everything together. It's fine. Yeah. Another good one is Step in Time. Dun, 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 step in time. Dun, 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 step in time.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved that one. Yeah. And the last one that I really liked was Let's Go Fly a Kite, which was lovely. Yeah. It's right at the end of the film. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think it's at the end. I don't know. Anyway.
Actually, it was at the end, but wasn't it somewhere else in the movie as well?
I think the reprise is at the end when the father goes and takes them. Anyway, I'll get there. So, in the end, the father accidentally gets himself fired from his job at the bank. And on the way out, he tells a joke that one of his kids told him. And they learn this one from the shenanigans that, Mary Poppins exposed them to. So they learn this joke and they told the dad, and he didn't think it was that funny at the start. And anyway, as he's being fired, he decides to crack a joke as he leaves, which I think is a classy move in all circumstances. If you get fired, crack a joke on the way out. It's good. Yeah. So he cracks this joke. The old bank partner laughs and he floats to the ceiling. The father then decides, you know what, life is short. He should be spending more time with his bloody crazy kids. So that's what he does. He goes home and he finds their broken kite and he fixes it. And then he takes them off to the park to fly it. While in the park, the father runs into the son of the old partner that father dropped the joke on. And he found out the old bloke died. Dead. Probably laughed too much. I don't know. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when he floated to the ceiling, that was symbolic of him dying, which is interesting because if you actually know anything about the movie, they go and see Bert's uncle and he lives on the roof. He lives upside down because he floats up there, and the more you laugh, the more you float up into the ceiling. So thinking about this as an adult, I'm like, was he a ghost? Maybe he was a ghost. Oh, my God. It's just like go to a ghost house and, like, sort of become a ghost. And that's one of the reasons why Mary Poppins was a bit like, no more shenanigans, we're not floating on the roof.
Or it could have just been the fact the dude was, like, 170.
Maybe when he flew up to the roof, he hit a fan and fucking took his head off. I don't know. It wasn't explained. So we can only speculate wildly at this point. That's all we can do.
Yeah.
So he runs into the sun, the old bloke died, and the son was taking the spot of the old bloke, and he offers to rehire the father because he always liked him. So all ends well. Yeah. With the family reunited, Mary's work's done, and she says her goodbyes. She says goodbye to Bert, and he says, don't be too long now, or something along those lines. And then she floats up, she puts her umbrella up, and she floats up into the heavens again from whence she came. And that's it. That's the movie in a nutshell.
Ooh, don't forget she has an argument with the umbrella.
Hazel went to the stage show, Mary Poppins. It was absolutely fantastic.
I've heard amazing things. I have not seen the new film adaptation with Emily Blunt. I also
isn't that number two?
Well, there's Mary Poppins Returns, so maybe that's it. But then there was also Saving Mr. Banks, which I haven't watched either. That was like that's a sequel of some description. I don't know. It's got something to do with the father. I don't know. So there's lots. There's lots of spin-offs. Yeah, lots of remakes. I thought
that was Disney. Like Walt Disney. Disney. It was about Walt Disney, not it was made
Walt
by Disney.
Disney making Mary Poppins, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. When I was reading the spin-offs and stuff like that when I was researching for this, I was sitting there and I was going, I have not seen any of these. I just kind of like the classic. Although I do love Emily Blunt, so I probably should watch the other one. But, yeah, I'm just a bit of a classic. I like this one, and this is where I stayed. I didn't go and watch any of the others, so I don't really know what it's about. So, this was one of my favorites. And some, notable mentions were ones that Bianca capped off on before and I'd completely fucking forgot about, being Annie. Loved Grease as well.
Blues Brothers, you could do with your eyes shut. Like
I can sing all the songs. I can tell you almost word for word the whole movie. Yeah. I loved Blues Brothers. Blues Brothers is one of my favorite movies ever. Completely didn't occur to me that it was a musical.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Until I was doing the research, I was like, oh fuck, yes, of course it was.
My dad used to put that on for us, and he liked the tunes, and he also was a big Belushi and Dan Aykroyd fan. So that's my segment, guys. Anyway, shall we wrap this up?
Yeah, sure thing. Is it me? No, it's you.
Me. That's me. Hey. Hey. I have had so much fun researching this topic, and I actually did do a bit of research, but I went down a rabbit hole and none of it was relevant for this particular topic. I actually found out a lot about Julie Andrews. Wow, some of her life was super sad. So, yeah.
Oh, no. Not Julie Andrews.
She didn't grow up in a Disney film. Who knew? Anyway. So, yes, I had so much fun researching this topic, as I did with all the other topics we have done over the last year and a bit.
Yeah.
So we still really want you guys to send in your topic suggestions. We want them from our listeners.
We haven't had a topic suggestion.
Killy's got one.
Oh,
Killy's got one.
Yep. Go.
I think it was put that leaf back where it came from.
So help me. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had a topic suggestion from a listener in 50 episodes.
A long time.
Yeah. It's been ages.
Although we did the butter heist because Jen, again, came to save our asses with some suggestions. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Thanks, Jen. You're a legend.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, so if you've got something that you want us to discuss, email us at fridaynightwinefight@gmail.com. You can reach out on our socials, Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram. Send a raven, send a fox. We don't care. Just get the message to us. We're all over it. Tune in next week for our topic, which is 1700s Europe. Yeah. Great. Get on board for this one, guys. Get on board. To everyone who has listened to this, we would like to thank each and every one of you for your time in listening to our utter garbage. We hope that you have found it entertaining and not using any of the facts discussed in this recording to make important decisions in your lives, unless it's in relation to the purchase and use of a protection chainsaw or any of the movies that we have discussed tonight. Good night, y'all.